Nutritional minerals do not occur in a uniform blanket around the crust of the earth. They occur in veins like chocolate and chocolate ripple ice cream. Nutritional minerals do not occur in a universal blanket around the crust of the earth. Even in a single field on a farmer's property, minerals occur again in veins. So row number one might have 22 minerals in it in that field. Row number five might have three. Row number 10 might have 16. Row number 15 might have zero. Row number 20 might have 70. Row number 30 might have zero. Row number 35 might have three. Row number 40 might have 16. So when you wake up in the morning and you're eating your organic multigrain toast, it's a throw of the dice on which row in the field that grain grew in, how many minerals you're getting. And if that field is 10 years old, there's none in there. Because farmers don't put the minerals back in the soil. Because if they were to put all 60 essential minerals in the soil that you and I need, an ear of corn would cost you $35. An apple would cost you $20. So they're not going to do it. They only put NPK, three nutrients, which give them the maximum yield in terms of tons and bushels per acre. A farmer does not care how many minerals are in the pasture where the animals eat. A farmer does not care how many minerals are in the grain he's feeding his livestock, his cows and sheep and pigs and chickens, because he gives them little pellets with everything in there. That's his insurance policy. He gives them the pellets measured per animal. It's a waste of resources to throw it out in the field and hope the plant takes it up and hope the animal eat it. It's too chancy. So unless you're supplementing with all 90 essential nutrients every day, every day, every day, every day without failure. Well, I didn't do it today because I had to wake up early and run here and run there and I just forgot about it. Well, you just took a few hours or days off your life. And so your life must not be very important. You're betting your life and your health and your longevity on a throw of the dice every morning you wake up and don't take your 90 essential nutrients. Now, I think you're an intelligent group, and I don't think that knowingly you get up every morning and throw the dice and hope it comes out right. Because human beings are intelligent. We're not a mosquito. We're not a flea. We're not a turtle. We're not a snake. We're not a chicken. We're not a cow. And so we can think and say, I'm going to take all 90 essential nutrients. I'm going to avoid all the bad stuff. And if you do that, and you watch both ways before you cross the street, make sure you're wearing a parachute when you jump out of airplanes, that kind of stuff. Don't drive with people who are drinking. And the odds are you'll live to be 100. But if you don't do all of that, somewhere along the line, you're going to fail. It's that simple. Now, people always say to me, now, come on, Doc. Now, what about people 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago? They didn't supplement. They didn't supplement. I'm telling you, the supplementation started over 50,000 years ago. Supplementation started over 50,000 years ago. And it started out with a group of people called Neanderthals. 50,000 years ago, there was a great event. It was called the Great Leap Forward by anthropologists. Suddenly, at that point, universally around the world, human beings lived longer. They were taller. They stood upright. They had a bigger survival rate of babies. Definitely something happened because the group of people prior to the Neanderthals, the Cro-Magnons, they lived about a third of the length of time. They had a very low survivability of babies. They were around for thousands of years, but when the Neanderthals came, the Neanderthals either ate the Cro-Magnons, or they brought in bacteria and viruses which wiped them out, one or the other. There was no hybridization between them. We know that from DNA comparisons. And the interesting thing is the Cro-Magnons were very artistic people. They're the ones that drew all these cave drawings in France and Europe. They're all familiar with the bison and the buffalo and the wild horses, all drawn by cavemen. Well, they were the Cro-Magnons. And there's never been a complete skeleton found of a Cro-Magnon. All we find are fragments of jaw and a little bit of a skull and maybe a wrist bone. That's it. We've never found anything remotely near a complete skeleton of a Cro-Magnon. Never. Well, the next generation of human beings, the Neanderthals, the classic cavemen, the Neanderthals, we have 10,000 complete skeletons. So it went from nothing to 10,000 complete skeletons. And this is why anthropologists call this the Great Leap Forward. Suddenly there was something different that happened. And they attribute it to a change in the voice box structure of the Neanderthals. Now, that's because that's all they know. And they said, well, they can communicate better. That's why they live three times as long. And I'm telling you, there's something different here. Now, nobody else has tripped onto this. And the reason I tripped onto it is because of my background. I have a degree in agriculture. I'm a veterinarian. I've done 20,000 autopsies. I'm a physician. Very few people have that training. I'm saying that I'll give it. Medical doctors are all smarter than me. I'll give them that. But they don't have the training I have. And so I've recognized something they haven't. First of all, I've told you we have 10,000 complete skeletons in Neanderthals. And there's two things that they found very interesting about Neanderthals in their graves. Number one, obviously, in each of these 10,000 graves, there's a full skeleton. A full skeleton, 10,000 graves. These are shallow graves, which were lined with either river gravel or small rocks. They put the body in a fetal position. They covered them with bigger rocks so the hyenas and other animals couldn't dig them up and eat them. And then there was something else. There was only one thing. There was no tools. There was no weapons. There was no precious metals, no jewels, no writings or tablets. There was none of that. There was only one other thing in the grave. There was only one other thing in the grave along with the Neanderthal's skeleton. A little clay jug. In every grave, there was a little clay jug of wood ashes. Now, wood ashes are not carbon. Wood ashes are plant minerals that are left when you burn away the carbon in the wood. Wood ashes are plant minerals that are left when you burn away the carbon in the wood. Now, here's the most fascinating part. When they did an analysis of the bones of the Neanderthals, and they did an analysis of the wood ashes, guess what? The analyses are identical. That's why the Neanderthals' bones are like steel. They survived 50,000 years in the soil without decomposing because they had so much minerals in them. Well, where did the minerals come from? Well, from wood ashes. They began to put wood ashes in their food. Now, they weren't great gardeners, but they began to put wood ashes in their food, especially if they were away from the ocean up in the mountains. They didn't have access to salt easily, and so they began to sprinkle wood ashes on their food. Have you ever dropped a hot dog or a hamburger in the ashes at a campfire when you're barbecuing and you just try and wipe it off and blow it off and then eat it? Well, they figured out, somebody accidentally found out, well, this is a worldwide event, the Great Leap Forward. You can look it up in any anthropology text. They say somewhere between 30 and 50,000 years ago, the Great Leap Forward occurred, and the Neanderthals were the initiators, and the anthropologists wanted to attribute it to their larynx. Well, why did they have this bucket of wood ashes in there? They knew. They were clever enough to know. They didn't know nutrition. They didn't know biochemistry. But they know that that was the thing that made them different. And I just thought that was phenomenal. Plant minerals. Do we talk about plant minerals? Hallelujah. Yeah. Back in the 1930s, the longest lived and the most recognized healthy and long-lived peoples were the Hunzas, who live in northern Pakistan. And Art Linkletter wanted to live to be 100. You've all heard, most of you have heard Art Linkletter. And he hired an eye doctor by the name of Alan Bannick to go to Hunza up in northern Pakistan to figure out why they lived to be 100, why their average lifespan was 90, and why they were so healthy. They're a third world country. They didn't have hospitals and doctors and drugs and insurance, so why did they live so long? So Alan Bannick was hired by Art Linkletter to go to Hunza and find out their secret. He stayed there 6 months. He was kind of an amateur farmer and an eye doctor, and he came back and he put everything he learned in a book. He couldn't quite put his finger on it. He knew it had something to do with their diet and their cultural habits, but that was about it. Well, there's two things that jump out at you in this book. Number one, they farmed at 19,500 feet of altitude. Now that's 4 miles high. Now that in and of itself is meaningless information. But at 19,500 foot elevation, the growing season is only 45 days. And potatoes and corn and rice and wheat and barley and oats and rye all require 90 to 120 days to grow. So it wasn't some revelation from any place or that some clever scientist figured it out. Just because of where they chose to live from a defensive standpoint, they picked this high place so they could defend it, but they couldn't grow carbohydrates. So their diet was exclusively goat meat, mutton, lamb, chicken, eggs, cheese, butter. All the things we're not supposed to eat. Animal fats and animal proteins, almost no vegetable material, almost none. The only vegetables or fruit they had was apricots, and that's how they got their omega-3s, where they cracked the apricot seeds, and they would actually take the oils, the omega-3 oils, out of the apricot seeds. So they had a very low, very highly restricted caloric diet. Almost no carbohydrates. And secondly, the thing that jumped out at me was a whole chapter devoted to wood ashes. They took the wood ashes from a heating and cooking fires, and they put them in their gardens for their little bit of tomatoes and onions and garlic, which they made kind of a salsa to put on their meat and cheese and stuff. And they mixed their salt with it because salt was very expensive. They lived up in the mountains, had no access to the sea. They were very poor, so nobody wanted to climb all the way up 19,500 feet for a cup of coffee because there was nothing to trade for. And so they were isolated, and they used wood ashes as salt. So they would mix 10 parts wood ashes to 1 part salt and put in their food as a condiment. They put them in their gardens as fertilizers, and the tomatoes and the garlic took everything up. And they ate the tomatoes and garlic and got minerals that way. It would put it in their food with the salt. And so it satisfies restricted calories without malnutrition. Plant minerals and restricting calories.